Hi there, and welcome to a bonus episode of the Hugo's There podcast. This one isn't specifically science fiction related. I think there will be some science fiction and fantasy discussed today, but kind of doing the typical thing we do every year and talk about the Oscars. I used to put this in the brief and not so brief feed, but I can see the numbers, and I know that more people listen to Hugo's There than brief and not so brief, and so I thought I'll put it where more people might hear it. And speaking of more people, normally I do this with my son Ethan and or my nephew Peter, sometimes just me and Peter. But I thought since Ethan couldn't do it this year, I would find a couple other people to join. And I saw that two of my internet friends were also trying to watch as many of the Oscar-nominated films as possible. And so I invited them on. So voices you will definitely recognize, Lori from Hugo Girl. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I muted myself so that I wouldn't talk over you. There we go. Hi. And thanks for letting me join you.
Yeah, absolutely. And Juan San Miguel. Hey, Juan.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
Good. Okay. That being said, and Peter, of course. Hi, Peter.
Oh, hi.
All right. And we are going to go in the order. If you go over to Wikipedia and you look at the Oscar nominations, we're going from the bottom up. So we're starting with some of the smaller categories and then working our way eventually to Best Picture. We're going to go around on each category and give our favorites, kind of, you know, some general discussion, who we would choose if we could choose the Oscars, and then try and guess what the actual winner will be. One other thing to make it go a little faster, I'm not going to say all the names, you know, from like costume design and film editing and all that kind of stuff, just because A, I didn't take the time to go through and make sure I know how to pronounce them all, and I like to get people's names correct, and just to speed things up a little bit. Okay, so we're going to start with visual effects, and the nominees are The Creator, Godzilla Minus One, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, and Napoleon. So, general discussion. Juan, anything to say on this category?
Sadly, I only saw two of these. I saw Godzilla Minus One and Guardians of the Galaxy. I haven't seen the other ones. I'd like to see Godzilla Minus One. I mean, it was pretty impressive, I think. A good use. I don't know if they use computer effects, but it was sure a lot of good practical effects, a lot of good images. I mean, particularly with the execution of the big guy himself. But I think, unfortunately, well, I shouldn't say that. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy might have the edge because it's a little bit more flashy, but sometimes I'm very disappointed with some of these categories because sometimes it'll go to a film that you think is fairly, for lack of a better word, mundane, so it wouldn't surprise me if something like Napoleon would win for some reason.
Yeah. What about you, Peter?
I've only seen a couple of these as well, unfortunately. I need to get to a few of them, but I have seen Godzilla Minus One and Guardians of the Galaxy. I'd like Godzilla Minus One to take it. Yeah. I think that's just, while they may not be, you know, the best visual effects by like, you know, sheer technical, quality, I think they're very evocative. They're very fun. Yeah.
Lori, any thoughts on visual effects?
Yeah. So I've only seen two of these, but I've seen The Creator and Napoleon. Hmm. And, Napoleon, I feel like kind of your standard war movie. I don't know. I'm probably not the right person to say that, but I just was like, well, I've seen boats and lots of horses and stuff before. However, there is a really cool sequence where there's a battle on a frozen lake and they're falling through the frozen lake. And that actually, that was probably my favorite part of the movie. I was riveted. Mm-hmm. But the Creator, had anybody else seen The Creator?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought the effects in The Creator were fantastic.
Yeah.
Me too. The story left a little something to be desired, but I really enjoyed looking at the movie. It looked great. And I listened to a podcast about it recently. And a lot of why it looks so good is because most of it was, or a lot of it was real. Mm. They didn't build sets as much as they went to places, or they didn't do like CGI. They would, be really in the place where they wanted for the scene to be set. It was the podcast I listen to is called Going Rogue, and she covers speculative fiction podcasts. It's pretty new. I heard about it on Octothorpe, and so I listened to the Creator episode, and it had really interesting information about the movie. So that one, it looks great.
Yeah. I did see all of these, and for Napoleon, I feel like it's like the invisible special effects, right? Where you don't think of them as being special effects shots.
Sure.
For me, Godzilla Minus One is my pick just because it's impressive how well they did on a $12 million budget with that movie in general, which I think is fantastic, and with the effects in particular. And it really kind of evokes the classic Godzilla as well. So yeah. That would be my pick. I'm not sure how to handicap what the Academy would reward here, but I'm going to say Godzilla Minus One. Okay, moving on to costume design. So we have Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things. So, Juan, what do you have?
I think, you know, Barbie obviously was creating this crazy world and all the, you know, costumes to fit in it, you know, and having that edge of unreality to it, at least when they're in particularly when they're in Barbie world.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was pretty impressive. But I think, I've been disappointed in this category because you'll have some really good classic science fiction movies or having to create an entirely new wardrobe and it goes to something like Oppenheimer, which that's why I'll probably say that might be what the Academy goes for. Unfortunately,
right.
Unfortunately, that's, I guess, my cynicism popping in,
yeah.
Sadly.
But look at all the hats and suits that they had.
But as Rory pointed out, they didn't have any clothing for Florence Pugh.
I will say that if you don't follow Lori on social media, you're missing out on some great movie reviews. And I did like, I can't remember exactly what the line, it was something like they had room in the script for two female characters, but only wardrobe for one of them.
Yeah, that's a pretty good paraphrase.
Yeah. All right. How about you, Lori? Costume design.
So I've seen all of them except for Killers of the Flower Moon, and I obviously I agree, Juan, with things set firmly grounded in reality. There's less room for creativity there, so maybe they're very, very accurate and well executed. But I feel like kind of like, well, okay, you know, you had a pattern there, and I feel like that applies for Oppenheimer and Napoleon, Barbie and Poor Things. I think both are great in this category. I think Poor Things, I love the puffy sleeves. I have mixed feelings about Poor Things overall, but I loved the costumes. They were weird. They were really interesting. And then the thing I like about Barbie is that, yes, there was a large body of existing clothing to pull from, but you have to take what a doll wore in 1970 and make it work on a human body and pick and choose what you can actually do that with and then still make it fantastical, but that someone can wear it and act and move in it. So, my top pick would probably be Barbie, but you know, I think I probably share Juan's opinion that might go to Oppenheimer for all the hats.
It could be. How about you, Peter?
This one's tough. I like the costume design in Barbie and Poor Things absolutely the most. I mean, they're both just really fun and inventive and interesting. And yeah, I feel like everything else on this list is very historical and aiming for accuracy. And I do think the Academy likes accuracy, but I think this year they might give it to Barbie. I feel like they're going to be looking for categories to give it to Barbie just because it's such a big movie this year. And I think people will be disappointed if it doesn't win at least.
Well, the Academy is literally adding a category next year for like achievement in box office.
I saw that. Yeah. I feel like, yeah. No, I think they'll give it to Barbie, and I think it's deserved, honestly.
For me, I think Poor Things would be my choice. I think, you know, I'll echo what you both have said about Barbie and Poor Things being the more fantastical. Poor Things, I have a hard time separating the costuming from the production design, but it all goes together so well that it just kind of seems of one piece. So that would be my choice. And I'm going to guess the Academy will go that way too. Unless it's just a landslide Oppenheimer everything, which it could be. Okay, on to film editing. We have Anatomy of the Fall, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things. And I will say off the top here, I don't think a four-hour movie should win for editing. Just saying.
I'll bring that up because I did see Killers of the Flower Moon, and yeah, a friend of mine loved it and felt it was well paced, but there were some scenes that I would have cut out. I would give it to Poor Things because I think they were kind of doing some things like switching from black to white, and also it just overall looked good. It looked well, so I would give it to that. But again, unfortunately, I should stop saying that. It's just that probably Oppenheimer's might have a good shot at it.
Okay, Lori?
I don't have a strong opinion about this, and I think I feel the same way I do about with editing in the Hugo Awards, where I think really good editing, you kind of don't notice it.
Yeah.
Or at least I don't. But I did notice that I did not care for the editing in Oppenheimer. I felt kind of very jerked from short scene to short scene during that movie, and I kind of halfway through, I was like, I need to take a pause because I'm moving from like one very significant conversation to another very significant conversation, and I didn't really like the pacing of it. So that's really the only opinion I have about this category. I don't think I could pick a potential winner.
Peter?
Yeah, this is also a category that I think is the same as what Laurie said. Like, when it's good, you don't notice it. And when it's bad, you know, you might notice. But in this case, I feel like there's a lot of good here, mostly. And I think if I had to predict one, I think Oppenheimer, because I think Oppenheimer is going to take a lot of awards. But I think I like the editing more in Poor Things. I don't know if that's the editing or the cinematography that I like, but the way it looks, the way it feels, I like.
Yeah.
Oh, can I change my mind about one thing?
Go for it.
I think that Anatomy of a Fall has some really good editing. I think it was too long, so that, you know, that's a mark in the con column. However, the courtroom scenes as a lawyer, I thought they were so well done. I thought the way they cut between the scenes at home, people's memories of things, people's recitation of things, and then how the hearing was being conducted was just really well done, especially when they got to, I don't want to spoil anything, but the scene where they play the audio that the husband had secretly recorded, and the way you saw part of that unfold and the way you didn't see part of it unfold and you only heard it, and it really leaves it open to interpretation of what actually happened. And that's really how that works in court when you have audio like that. Really, anything could be happening behind it. And so I thought that that was actually really well done.
Nice. It's cool to get an insider view there. I know that the court system is different in France than it is.
It sure is.
it looked very different from anything that I've seen. But yeah, I was going to bring up exactly that scene in Anatomy of a Fall and the decision to show some stuff and not show, you know, the decision when not to show the crucial moment was I thought a great idea there. So Anatomy of a Fall would be my pick, but I'm going to guess Oppenheimer as well. Okay, cinematography. So now we're into real film stuff here. And we have El Conde, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things. So we're starting to get to the portion of the awards where there's a lot of repeats and just an occasional different one. So did anybody else see El Conde?
No, I didn't see it. Did you?
I did watch it. Yeah. It's interesting, but it's one of those ones where I feel like it's black and white and that's what suffices for cinematography sometimes.
Yeah.
It was an interesting movie.
What's it about? I mean, as I said, I think
it's about if Pinochet was a vampire.
Oh,
the dictator from, was it Chile?
Chile.
Yeah.
Trust me, unfortunately, my dad would, I shouldn't say that again. My dad would always bring that up as one of the great examples of bad U.S. foreign policy.
Yeah. Okay. So any comments? One.
Well, I put in Poor Things because Poor Things had a really cool look and the use of color, you know, it was surreal. And I mean, they went from black and white in the first part of the film and then went to these fantastic vistas in, I believe, Portugal. And then when she's traveling around, and it just kind of looked different for every environment, and the color just kind of popped. And again, I think the only thing which is kind of even close to it might be Oppenheimer or Killers of the Flower Moon. That also had a very good look to it. I mean, that's to me what cinematography is, how good the film looks like.
Lori?
I vote present. No opinion for this one, really.
Okay.
It might be one of those things again for me where when it's done well, I just don't really notice.
Yeah. Peter, any opinions?
Yeah. I think my favorite cinematography is definitely Poor Things here. I just think it's really uniquely shot. A lot of fisheye lenses. It's doing the most with cinematography, and I do I liked that amount of what it's doing. Right. I do think I feel like I'm going to be a broken record here. I think Oppenheimer will probably take it, but I liked the way Poor Things looked more.
My problem with Poor Things and like the fisheye lens, I was never sure why that was necessary ever. Like, if you're looking through a keyhole, I get it, but I couldn't tell you why, you know, what is that perspective we're seeing? Why is that a thing? Like the wider field of view I kind of got in places, but the fisheye stuff, I was a little puzzled as to why that choice. My choice would be Oppenheimer, and that's, I think that's going to be my guess as well. Okay. Makeup and hairstyling. So we have Golda, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, and Society of the Snow. So, Juan, what do you got?
I got Poor Things again. Obviously, there was the makeups of William Dafoe. And also, I mean, I guess Bella had to look a little bit off and the other things. So, I mean, obviously, that was the most talented one. I mean, Although if looking, if they're going to pick for something ordinary, they might, I don't know if they'd pick Maestro because they tried to make the lead look like Bernstein, but
yeah.
But that'd be my go. But again, I'd probably, let me take a quick look if I put, yeah, I also put in Oppenheimer because again, they're really trying to create that period, the '40s and the '50s, you know, to try to get everybody to look right.
Yeah. Lori, opinions on this one?
Yeah, I've only seen Oppenheimer and Poor Things, but I did just hear from a friend who just saw Golda and said that Helen Mirren was unrecognizable and that it was incredible. So I'll just pass that along because I trust her judgment on that. And as far as Oppenheimer, I mean, I don't know. It's again with the like, yeah, they look period accurate, but is that special or is that exciting? I mean, I don't know.
Right.
And then in Poor Things, I thought it was an interesting choice that Bella was so not made up. She has the very, very, very long hair, but she's really just like got excellent eyebrows and freckles, and she's not made up really in any of the movie. So I liked that choice. And then I think Juan, you make a good point about Willem Dafoe's makeup is pretty great, pretty interesting. So yeah, I don't think I've seen enough of them to really pick one, but out of the ones that I have seen, Poor Things, but it sounds like Gold is pretty incredible.
Peter?
I think, yeah, Poor Things is, again, I think doing the most in this category. It's just like it's doing a lot. It's really kind of swinging for it. And everybody else is kind of aiming to recreate the look of someone who really existed. And I do think the Academy will probably go for one of those movies that's just trying to recreate a specific look. I'm guessing Maestro simply because I just don't want to see Oppenheimer win like 18 things. Maybe Maestro. They're trying to recreate somebody. I think they love giving this to one where it's a specific famous person. And it's a toss up between the three, the three movies here. So I'll guess Maestro.
The Oscars love a prosthetic nose.
They really do.
I will say one thing, Society of the Snow. It's curious that it's in this one, because if you're not familiar with the film, it's about the people in Uruguay who crash landed. And unfortunately they were there for a long time without any help. So I guess, I hope they gave it to them because they showed what people would look like when they can't go to a barber or a hairstylist for a few weeks or however long they were stranded in the Andes.
Well, I can say I did see all these movies, and there was something about Society of the Snow, like these people being stranded up there. They just got more and more weathered and disheveled, you know, and stuff. But there was something beautiful about it. It's hard to put my finger on it. I really enjoyed the movie. Maestro, they did a good job evoking Leonard Bernstein, but I don't really care about that kind of thing. Golda, I thought it was right on the edge of Uncanny Valley, actually, because I could recognize Helen Mirren, and so I found it a little distracting. But I'd go with Poor Things, just because I think it was an exceptional example of kind of, and like Peter, like you said, it's kind of the most makeup and hairstyling of any of these movies. It kind of like a couple years ago, I don't remember if it was last year, when we were talking about editing and you're like, Elvis, it was the most editing of any movie. okay, so we'll move on to sound. And this is The Creator, Maestro, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Oppenheimer, and The Zone of Interest. One?
In my notes, I think I was giving it to Oppenheimer for both things because obviously they had to do obviously the sound of when the bomb goes off and other things. The only thing that I would kind of consider might be Zone of Interest because I don't, you know, because the lack of sound, it's just kind of very natural background sound. I don't remember anything with the exception of the dream sequences in it. That required any type of special sound, but I would give the edge to Oppenheimer, which I think that's a fair cop because they had to, obviously he had that big technical scene where, you know, he had to try to make the bomb feel like something. And I think they succeeded at that.
All right, Lori.
Yeah. I echo everything Juan said about Oppenheimer and the, you know, of course the necessary silence before and after the bomb too is a big part of it. And I just, that to me, that seems like an obvious win, but I've only seen The Creator in the category other than Oppenheimer. But yeah, I feel like Oppenheimer is a shoe in for that.
Peter?
Same. I think it's Oppenheimer. It's got to be. I think that's one of the elements that I noticed the most about the movie, you know, leaving it is just the impact that scene leaves on you. And it's not really the visuals that do it. I feel like it's the sound, it's the feeling of it. for me.
Interesting. And so to me, the obvious winner here is The Zone of Interest, just because that movie is 100% about the sound. The movie starts, and so if you ever do see this, the movie starts with about two and a half minutes with no picture, only sound. Mm. And then throughout the movie, you're seeing stuff happen, but you're hearing a different story being told in the background. And I thought that was just amazing. So I, that would be my choice, but I think it's going to go to Oppenheimer. So we'll see. All right. Production design: Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things. Stop me if you've heard these before. What do you think, Juan?
Well, again, I put in Poor Things because you had a lot to design, and it's kind of a weird, that was the interesting thing about Poor Things. It's kind of a fantastical Victorian England, you know, and airships or, you know, elevated trains and the like and the ship itself. I mean, that was pretty impressive. Although, I mean, you do have like three recreations. You have Napoleon, Oppenheimer, and Killers of the Flower Moon, which are trying to, you know, recreate something. And then Barbie might, I still go with Poor Things, but Barbie might have a slight edge because Barbie Land, you know, was a real great creation, you know, with the uses of color. And also, you know, making the dream house seem real and then contrasting it when the Kens go mad or, you know, take over in the third act. So that might have a shot, but I think, again, Oppenheimer, because they're trying to recreate the 1940s and they recreated the original Los Alamos as it was in that time, probably will give it an edge.
Hmm. How about you, Lori?
I will be so grumpy if it's Oppenheimer. This is really, I feel like, the one category where I feel strongly that Barbie should get it. Because Oppenheimer, you know, half of it takes place in a conference room. Right. it's, you know, I don't mean this in a pejorative way, but Oppenheimer is largely men talking in rooms. So I think Barbie's got it for me, and I really hope that it wins, and I think it's got a shot at winning. Because all of that stuff that we see, they built it. I mean, they really made that beach, that pink sand beach that everyone fell on, and Issa Rae said it really hurt to fall on it because it was plastic. All of that stuff they really built, and the attention to detail with the Barbie land to make everything kind of two-thirds size, because when you actually play with Barbies, they're a little too big for everything. They're a little too big for their car. They're a little too big for their house. So the attention to all of that, and every single thing in Barbie Land was a deliberate choice. And my personal favorite thing that I saw that I couldn't spot in the movie, but I saw in some kind of special features, was a Barbie version of Moby Dick laying on Barbie's nightstand. It was Moby Barbie with a pink and blue whale tail on the cover of the book. And so just everything in that was so intentional and so thoughtful, right from opening the refrigerator, and there's like the flat decal of the contents of the refrigerator. That's exactly what what the toys are like. So that one I actually feel kind of strongly about, and I really hope that it wins. And I think that it's got a shot because it is so well done and I think so popular.
Yeah. Yeah. You make a good case for Barbie. I hadn't thought of it that way. And, you know, I grew up in a house with three sisters, so I've seen a fair number of Barbie toys. And the point about everything kind of not being quite the right scale is really, really good.
And the no stairs in the Barbie houses. You know, the narrator says this, speaking of Helen Mirren, the narrator says that, but we don't have stairs in the houses because Barbies don't use stairs. You just take them and put them where you want them to be.
Right, exactly. I mean, I had picked Poor Things here just because I feel like to go with the costume design and makeup and that, or hairstyling and all that kind of stuff, I feel like it all works together really well. It's kind of, it reminds me of Wes Anderson a little bit, but to an even more kind of fantastic scale on it. Like I love the production design of the steamship, or I'm not even sure it was a steamship, honestly.
Well, it's Victorian. It's Victorian era, so.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was my choice and my guess as well. We'll see. It's probably going to be Oppenheimer. Okay, a couple categories I have kind of a hard time handicapping, especially the second one of these, but the music category. So we'll start with original score. We have American Fiction, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things. So what do you think, Juan?
I would vote for it, and it's just for nostalgia purposes. I would give it to John Williams for a Dial. I mean, just, I thought the music was pretty good. I mean, I can defend that movie. I know others will probably challenge me on that, but I felt the music was right. It felt right. What did I think? Will win? Sorry, just looking. And I think the Academy might like it. It could be a lifetime achievement. I don't know when was the last time he did win an Oscar for best original score. So I say they'll give it to John Williams.
Interesting. Laurie, you said you're going to vote present for this one?
Yeah.
just because you're not good at judging scores?
I just don't tend to notice it, honestly. Just not something that I, unless it's really over the top, like the score in Dune, I noticed it because it was very loud and it was blaring and kind of rattling my teeth. But in general, yeah, I just don't super notice it.
Okay. Were you at an IMAX theater when you saw Dune? I'm just kind of curious.
No.
It was a regular theater?
Yes.
Okay. Just wondering.
Peter, what do you got for score?
I think for score, I would predict Oppenheimer, but I really actually like the score in Poor Things. It's doing something really weird with the instruments. I don't even know what instrument is making that sound, but it's this really weird kind of discordant noise in the background. I'm not sure to describe it, but I remember it distinctly since watching. I don't remember the score for any of these other movies. I think Oppenheimer will probably take it because I think Oppenheimer is going to win a lot of things. And I think they're going to just kind of conflate a lot of it together. But I think Poor Things is just the most interesting to me of what they're doing with it. Feels inventive.
I went with Oppenheimer across the board here. I thought it was a good score, and that's just what I'm going to pick. So original song, I'm not sure I have any opinions about these. I did watch all the movies, which this is my problem with original song, right? You can watch all these movies and never hear the songs because it doesn't have to be in the movie. It can be over the credits. And I think we just need to either do away with this category or say best song in a musical movie. And if there aren't enough musical movies to fill up the nominees, just only nominate three and they'd be fine. For original song, we have The Fire Inside from Flamin' Hot, which is hilarious. Diane Warren writing a song for that movie. I'm Just Ken from Barbie. What Was I Made For from Barbie. It Never Went Away from American Symphony and A Song for My People for Killers of the Flower Moon. I'm not going to try to say the native word because I don't think I'll do it right.
I can defend this category because although there have been some strange picks on it and some strange omissions of it. I was really disappointed that the song that I believe Alanis Morissette? I'm trying to remember. The song for the ending credits of Narnia didn't get nominated. It was a beautiful song. That was the year about the I think that was the pimp song that won that year. So I felt that was strange. But I you're talking to somebody who generally never leaves until the credits are over. So part of it is to see the score credits, which is usually one of the last ones. Or the music credits, I should say. So, and I've only seen, I think, obviously, I mean, Barbie's got like, is it two nominations? Yeah, two nominations. And I did see Killers of the Flower. I thought Killers of the Flower Moon might get picked because it sounded like an interesting, you know, that was kind of an interesting song. You know,
that is the most interesting of the songs on the list.
Yeah, because it is a native, in the native language, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it would go for that. But then what I'm trying to see, and I thought either of the Barbie songs might be the ones that are, that might have the edge for, oh, actually it's three Barbie songs if I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
Right. So I think,
you know, only one of the songs is sung by a character in the movie, right?
Well, I don't require that. I don't mind if the song doesn't get played. I mean, as I said, if you can listen to it. So that's why it doesn't bother me. Like I like the Wall-E song was played at the end, and I love that song. I mean, they played it, but then again, it's a Pixar film, so they always do something interesting with the credits. So people stay in and, you know, watch the graphics go by. No, that's for score.
Laurie, did you have opinions on this one?
Well, the only ones I'm familiar with are the ones from Barbie. I did listen to the Barbie soundtrack 7,000 times last year. Mm-hmm. And I'm not too ashamed to admit that when I did my 2023 Spotify Wrapped, I'm Just Ken was my most listened to song. Now, that is in part because there was a Barbie and Ken meetup at Dragon Con, and there was a I'm Just Ken sing along. And so Kevin and I had to study. So I guess I'm biased in favor of I'm Just Ken because it is so, so funny. And I think you make a good point, Seth, that it is actually performed by a character in the movie. So I think if you look at this list and you've seen the movies, like that one, you at least, well, I haven't, I don't know. I, I don't know if the other ones jump out at you in the film, but this one does jump out at you. So it's very much integrated into the movie. What Was I Made For is very moving, I think, and the scenes that it's paired with are really moving. So I think it is very effective in the Barbie movie. So I would love to see either one of those win, and it would be very funny if I'm just Ken won. But since I am not familiar with the other ones, I don't have a sense of what might win.
Yeah, yeah. Peter, what about you? Opinions on original song?
Yeah, I've seen almost all of these except for American Symphony. And yeah, the two songs from Barbie, I really hope one of them wins. I think they're both just well used in the movie. And to me, I do like that. I appreciate when the original song is a part of the movie. I'd be happy with either of them. I think maybe What Was I Made For will have an edge. I feel like it's got a little bit more, it's a little more emotional, you know? Yeah. I feel like they like to award things that make you feel something. I'm Just Ken gets you laughing. It is really fun. But I do think What Was I Made For will probably win. Be happy with either, though.
I was kind of surprised that the song from American Symphony wasn't part of the movie, because there's so much music in that movie. And it was a good movie. I liked it.
What was it about?
It's John Batiste. It's John Batiste and his wife. You know, she's going through leukemia relapse, and it kind of goes through. He is actually composing the American Symphony.
Oh, okay.
At that time, it's quite moving in places. It's very good, and I mean, just like the kind of talent that guy has is ridiculous. I'm gonna guess that the song from A Song for My People from Killers of the Flower Moon takes this one, but I would vote for What Was I Made For. I think, like Laurie said, it's very moving. The scenes that song plays over. Okay, now we're into the short films. So Peter and I have seen all the short films. I think Juan, you've been watching them as well. Laurie, are you up on the short films?
I saw the animated shorts.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll come to you for the animated ones, but skip over you for the live action. How about that?
No problem.
Okay. So the nominees are The After, Invincible, Night of Fortune, Red, White, and Blue, and The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar. And I will say, as a category, the short films, live action, and animated, there's a lot of really kind of dour films. So,
well, this year, I mean, I think this year. Although, if we're going to talk about it, I would give it to Harry Sugar. And you can see that on Netflix. I'm pretty sure. I think that was a Netflix produced film. And
speaking of Wes Anderson, that is Wes Anderson. Yeah. So,
I mean, it's kind of trippy. It's a narrative film. I mean, people are essentially telling the story. It's almost, I mean, it's based on a Roald Dahl story.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, would you say it almost has a Dr. Seuss like rhythm, or is that just me? I could be wrong about that.
I mean, it's definitely very Roald Dahl.
Yeah.
And I thought it was fun. I thought it was good. All right. What about you, Peter, for live action?
For live action, I think Henry Sugar is going to take it. Wes Anderson, you know, it's a big name. It's really well done. I think it's got the biggest production value and just feels like a little movie. I want Night of Fortune to win. I really liked that one. It made me smile. I got a kick out of it. It was nice, but I do think The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar will win. And I don't think it's wrong for it to win. It was good. But.
It's really well done. And, you know, in terms of the execution of a short film, it's my guess as well, but I would also pick Night of Fortune. I just found it very sweet it's very funny in a couple of spots as well.
Yeah.
So really enjoyed that one. Okay, so animated. Laura, you have seen some of these. So we have Letter to a Pig, 95 Senses, Our Uniform, Pachyderm, I think is how it's pronounced.
Pachyderm.
It's French?
French.
Yeah. And War is Over, inspired by the music of John and Yoko. So my, I think I say this every year. My favorite thing about the animated shorts is the variety of animation styles that you get is much greater than you get in the features. Because it's easy to do, you know, stop motion for a short film and a lot more expensive to do for a feature length film. So, Juan, what do you think of animated?
I'm giving it to The War Is Over inspired by the music of John and Yoko. Unfortunately, that was the brightest. I feel bad. I didn't realize what Pachyderm was about until I think I read more about it. And I feel depressed that I didn't realize about it. 95 Senses really takes a turn. You think it's going to be one thing, and then it's like, oh, wow. And it's like, you know, it becomes something different. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, they're all interesting. They're all worth your time. I think after the war is over, our uniform is the least dark of these films.
What about you, Lori?
So I don't know why I went to see these thinking I was going to have a good time. And I went to see them by myself. So brief backstory, I quit my job a few weeks ago and I had 3 weeks off. And I was like, well, I'm a lady of leisure. I'm going to go see these animated shorts in the middle of the day. And I was just sitting in the theater with my jaw hanging open. I was like, oh no, why have I done this to myself on a Friday? They were all really, really, I mean, I guess, you know, war is over. Based on the title, you know, it eventually isn't sad, but it starts out kind of sad and a bad thing happens to a nice pigeon. I think that for me, I would go with 95 Senses. And I was also surprised to see that that was Jerusha and Jared Hess who made Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah.
I saw their names pop up on the screen and I was like, wow, are you guys okay? But yeah, 95 Senses, it really does kind of pull the rug out from under you. And I thought it was really well done. And so if I picked, then I would pick that one. And I think all of them were good, but it's sort of difficult to choose between them because they all just made me feel sort of awful. Mm-hmm. And that's not really a criticism, but after, you know, an hour, some change of watching them, I was like, I need to go home and watch some actual kid cartoons for a little while, I think.
Lori, is this the first time you've seen the animated shorts? Or
probably, or seen them in a long time. Yeah, when I left the theater and I was like, oh no. And I'm in a group chat with some friends who are, one of my friends hosts an annual Oscars party. And this will be my first year going, so this is the first time I've actually set out to try to watch as many things as possible. And several of them told me, yeah, this is kind of par for the course with the short films.
Yeah, so Peter and I went and saw the shorts together up in Vancouver, Washington a couple weeks ago. So what did you think of the animated ones, Peter?
Yeah, they were all really sad. I can echo that. I feel like this was at the end of a long day of watching all the shorts in a single day. And I think I was hoping for a bit of reprieve. And I did not get any reprieve. That was brutal. I think War is Over will probably take the win. Yeah, the rest of them, I like them all. They're all good, but I don't know what I would pick as my favorite. I think Letter to a Pig, when I first watched it, I didn't understand what it was about. But after thinking on it for a while, kind of liked it. It was tough. This year was really, really grim.
Yeah. I mean, my pick, I went with the Pachyderm French one, just because of how effective it was. It like the dawning realization of, oh, that's what's going on here. It was very dark, but it was really effective. I feel like War is Over is the most mundane in terms of animation style, just kind of standard issue CG. Letter to a Pig had some really interesting use of shadows and that kind of stuff. But I, again, like you said, Peter, I wasn't totally sure what it was about. And 95 Senses had the largest variety of animation styles. It kept changing. And then Our Uniform had that very cool fabric animation.
Didn't 95 Senses have a different animator for each one or a different director? I could be.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Okay, documentary short film. So we have The ABCs of Book Banning, The Barber of Little Rock, Island in Between, The Last Repair Shop, and Nine Eye in Waipo, which I'm sure I didn't pronounce them correctly because I think they're Mandarin names. What do you think, Juan?
Unfortunately, this one I've got nothing on. I didn't get a chance to check them out.
Okay. Same with you, Lori?
Same.
All right, Peter, it's down to you and it is down to me.
Great. I think on this one, I liked almost everything.
Yeah, me too.
They were all really solid, really good documentaries, and I enjoyed them, yeah, immensely. I would really like The Last Repair Shop to win, though. That's my favorite by a good margin. I think the one that's going to win, cynically, is the ABCs of Book Banning, just given the amount of applause in the theater at the end. None of the other ones got anything like that. So I think that one will probably win. It's fine, but it just felt like it was a very basic documentary.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I liked it, and I agree with you. The Last Repair Shop would be my pick, and I'm hoping that it wins as well. But yeah. I will say, Lori, in terms of the other ones being a downer, the documentary ones are all interesting and more or less uplifting. So
more or less, yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting when real life is more uplifting than what we're imagining and animating.
Yeah.
Maybe just what they picked was more uplifting.
Yeah, I guess.
There were probably a lot of documentary shorts that were not quite as uplifting. Yeah.
Yes, you're probably very right about that.
Okay, so then we're on to documentary feature film. So we have Bobby Wine, The People's President, The Eternal Memory, Four Daughters, To Kill a Tiger, and 20 Days in Mariupol. I've seen three of these. There are a couple that I couldn't get to. How about you, Juan?
No, unfortunately, I've only heard about 20 Days of Mariupol. That's the only one I've heard about. And I think all I know is because I know what Mariupol is about, so...
Yeah, it appears that I'm the only one who's seen any number of these, so we can basically just skip it. I would have picked Bobby Wine, The People's President. I was surprised how moving it was. It reminded me a little bit of Navalny from last year or the year before. Another thing where it's a politician running against corruption, and guess what happens to him? So it's not the most uplifting thing, but it's inspiring anyway. But I'm going to guess it goes to 20 Days in Mariupol just because the Ukraine war. And it was very, very well done. And it's a punch in the nuts. So we're in another sensitive spot. Okay, we'll move on to animated feature. How about that? And this is my worst category. I only saw two of these, but the nominees are The Boy and the Heron, Elemental, Nimona, Robot Dreams, and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. And of course, Robot Dreams has not gone into wide release in the United States yet, which really sucks because it looked like it was the one that I most wanted to see. So Juan, how'd you do on these?
Same with you. I've seen them all except for Robot Dreams, although I do have my ticket to see it on Wednesday at 6 o'clock. And it might be showing. I think they are doing a big release of it on Wednesday, March. Is that March 6?
Yeah.
So you can catch it there. Actually, that's good. I had a friend who's a film critic for a website, and he thought they weren't going to release it until May. So this is some good news when I found out that it was getting a limited release for one day at one time on March 6th. For this one, I'm giving it to The Boy and the Heron. I'd like to see that win. Now, I know it's a controversial film because a lot of people don't know what it's about. I mean, this is a film where you can detach whatever theory is going on to it. I mean, I've listened to my friends on anime podcasts, and they're believing that this, you know, and putting this in the perspective of Miyazaki's other work, and the fact, you know, trying to figure out what it means. I also listened to our friends at The Incomparable, and they were also trying to put it in the big picture, but at the same time, they were also trying to figure out what it means. And they came up with different ideas of, I think, what it means than from the anime community. But this is a very strong category. As I saw Elemental and Nimona earlier this week, and they're both very strong films. And of course, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is great, except it ends on a cliffhanger. And I wish they didn't make Miguel O'Hara kind of the heavy, because I was a big fan of him in the 90s when he was the lead of Spider-Man 2099, and created by Peter David, who was, when Peter created him, he decided, well, where Peter Parker went right, I'm going to go left with Miguel. So, but that was a great film, and hopefully, maybe they'll lighten him up in the next one. But Boy and the Heron, I wouldn't be surprised if they go with the safe route with Elemental or with Pixar.
I'm kind of over Pixar films, so I didn't ever watch Elemental. If Robot Dreams would have come out earlier, I would have made more of an effort to see the rest of these. I've never willingly watched an anime film. I don't like the style, so I'm not attracted to it. Peter's brother Jacob is threatening to come over with a handful of Ghibli films and make me watch them. So it'll happen one of these days. Laurie, you're voting present on this one as well?
That's right.
Okay. Peter, what about you?
I've seen nearly all of these other than Robot Dreams, as sounds like you too as well. This was a pretty strong year. Yeah. I think Across the Spider-Verse is probably going to take it. Into the Spider-Verse took it. Across the Spider-Verse felt very critically acclaimed. And I think it'll probably take it. I think my favorite of this category though is Nimona. Weirdly, I saw that one late in the year, but I just really enjoyed it. I thought it was really inventive and swung for the fences. And for me, I think it hit. I think it really worked.
Yeah, pretty much the same for me. I really enjoyed Nimona, and I only saw Nimona and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, and I'm guessing Spider-Man. I'm not sure it would be my pick. I might go with Nimona. I found that very, very good. Okay, so international feature film or whatever the category is now. I only managed to see a couple of these. The nominations are Il Capitano, Perfect Days, Society of the Snow. I should say Il Capitano is from Italy, Perfect Days from Japan, Society of the Snow from Spain, The Teacher's Lounge from Germany, and The Zone of Interest from the United Kingdom, even though, of course, it's in German the whole time. Juan, have you seen these?
I only got a chance to see. I crammed a lot of films, and Perfect Days is still in the theater, so I actually went to see that yesterday, and which is interesting because I've been to Tokyo, and I think I in 2007, and I have seen those really nice out public bathrooms. It's a nice slice of life story. It's essentially about a toilet cleaner and what his life's about, and you know, nothing weird or tragic happens, or I mean, it's fairly plotless, but yet it's kind of engaging. I mean, he's, you know, going by and he gets thrown a few curves, but nothing like crazy. And also, it's weird that it's Japan. They consider that Japan's film because Wim Wenders, and I forget where he's from, but you know, he decided to make this film in Japan. I mean, he did. I think he did some other kind of trippy films. I also did see Zone of Interest. I didn't get the chance to see any of the others, which is a disturbing film, and I guess we'll talk more about that in since it's also a Best Picture nominee.
Yeah, I would have picked the Zone of Interest just because I thought it was a really strong film, and that's my guess as well. But the Society of the Snow was really, really well done, and I recommend not looking up any of the details of what happened because. I didn't look it up. Like, I was resisting the urge to Google it while I was watching the movie because I'm like, I don't know exactly how this comes out. So it was a good experience. But I didn't see any of the rest of them. So I was a little bummed that Past Lives wasn't on here.
Well, it's up for Best Picture.
Yeah.
And we can discuss it. But I am I don't know how, you know, if the country sends in a film because I think Godzilla Minus One should have been a lot of people were hoping it'd be in this category, and since it sums up, particularly since it's so much about post-war Japan, which is a subject, I mean, it's a subject which appears in some anime, you know, the post-war period, which is a very brutal period.
Honestly, I would have been thrilled to see Godzilla Minus One on Best Picture, so.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that would have been more of a long shot. I mean, they're hostile enough. I mean, even though there have been more fantasy and science fiction films showing up, I mean, there's still been kind of a hostility toward, you know, towards it. So,
all right, we'll go ahead and move on because Laurie and Peter haven't seen any of these, so we'll just keep on going. So the two writing categories, the first one is adapted screenplay, American Fiction, Barbie, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. I actually, in the last couple of weeks, picked up a couple of these on audiobook just because I was curious what kind of adaptations they were. So I have comments on a couple of them. What do you think, Juan?
I'd have to give it to Barbie, and it's a simple reason. They made an adaptation of a toy line, and you know, you could go anywhere with this. They could have actually done a story within the Barbie world and not interact with the real world, but they went for something kind of ambitious, something that's ever been done before. So I think they took this existing material and went and ran with it in a direction that I don't think people were necessarily expecting, or at least you know, what's your first mind of what comes in a Barbie movie? I don't think it would be this. I mean, I could be wrong about that.
Yeah. I think there has been some controversy about how does this meet the adapted screenplay standard, but Borat kind of opened the door for this because Borat was a pre-existing character and then was adapted to film.
Yeah, I think it raises an interesting question and interesting conversation because Barbie has lots and lots of existing media, but these characters are not characters that we've ever seen before. Yeah. Her name is Barbie, his name is Ken, but these iterations of them, we've never seen them before. Hmm. So I think there's a lot of room for thoughtful debate about that. And I don't feel super strongly about it, really, but I do think, you know, we're not taking an existing book as we are with a lot of the other nominees in this category and just adapting a whole story. I mean, the story had to really be created whole cloth from scratch, I guess is what I'm trying to say for Barbie. Mm.
Peter, thoughts on adapted screenplay?
Similar to what everyone's saying. I think my favorite from this though is American Fiction. I just think it's a really good screenplay. It's really sharp. The satire is fantastic.
Yeah. One of the things, so I can comment on this because I listened to this book on audio earlier this week, and the book basically contains the entire text of, I'm going to say My Pathology because I'm not going to say the other, the alternate title, at least not on the podcast. It contains like almost the entire text of it. And so it's interesting that the movie just has one tiny scene of it. And I thought it made it more effective, and it made it more about the characters than about the book. And it made an interesting choice at the end, I will say.
Seth, in the book, did his family have all the hardships that they were dealing with, or was that something they put in the film? I'm just curious.
No, that it's definitely there.
Okay.
In some ways, it's worse. The sister, I don't want to spoil it.
Okay.
What happens with the sister is worse. So yeah, interesting adaptation. Poor Things was the other one that I checked out the book as well. And it's interesting for it being kind of a feminist movie, but the book has the tale as told by McCandles. And then it also has Bella comes in and tells her story. And the book only adapts the part told by McCandles. It was the more interesting story because that's where all the fantastic stuff happens. But yeah, that was kind of fascinating. I think I would pick Poor Things. I thought it was an interesting adaptation, but I'm going to guess Barbie. Okay, original screenplay. We have Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Maestro, May, December, and Past Lives. Juan.
I was looking at these, and I was going to give it to Maestro, and I think the Academy might pick it too. I just think it was a pretty interesting way of putting a life together, warts and all. I mean, his ups and downs and... You know, they said it's a whole cloth. It's not based on a biography, so they had to do it some way. And I was engaged with it. A friend of mine, I think, thought it was my friend Kim thought it was a passable film. I mean, when she saw it, and I think it was a little bit more ambitious. I mean, the one film I just saw it 2 days ago. May to December is a really odd film, and I don't know what the screenwriter saw into this. I wish I could talk to my friend Barry to figure this out, because it's a disturbing film. I'm not sure what the point of that film is. If the elevator pitch is an actress researching the part of Mary Kay Letourneau, I believe that was the name of the real. And also, I think none of these films are happy films. I would also Maestro, I think, has the more peaks, I would say.
Laura, you got thoughts on this?
Kind of. So I've seen 3 of the 5. I have not seen Maestro, and I have not seen May December, although I think it is very strange to title it May December. This is not a May December romance. This is, a predatory adult and a child. I don't think May December adequately represents that, but I guess it's catchy. But I haven't seen it, and I don't really plan to see it. But I think that out of the 3 that I've seen, Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, and Past Lives, I think Anatomy of a Fall wins for me. Again, I think it was a little overly long, but I think that the conversations were so good. The conversations between the husband and the wife were so good. The courtroom scenes were so good. I thought that the dialogue in that movie was fantastic. And, so that one would be the winner for me.
All right, Peter, your winner and your pick.
I actually like almost all these movies. I did enjoy May December, strangely. It's very off kilter. It's very weird and very off putting and unsettling, but the way they weave comedy into it it worked somehow, even though it's not a happy story in the slightest. But I think for this one, I'd give it to Anatomy of a Fall as well. I just think the courtroom scenes are so engaging for a movie of that length. The script had to be really, really gripping to be just a bunch of people talking, for 2.5 hours.
Yeah, I agree. The Anatomy of Fall was one of my favorites of the year, actually, and I'd give it to that. I'm going to guess The Holdovers, which I also thought was excellent, and we'll talk about it more when we get to Best Picture. May December, the score in that one reminded me of like a Dateline NBC or a television movie. It was very weird.
Well, yeah, no, you'd get a piano piece like in the middle of the scene, and it was just.
Seems kind of right for a Dateline vibe, I think.
Yeah. To me, it felt all part of what they were creating with it. Yeah.
It, it didn't have a documentary feel. I mean, when we get, I guess, to the next category, Naiad did have a documentary feel because you have like stuff like how far, you know, she's from the coast of Key West, you know, and stuff like that, and also facts and also clips of what I believe is real footage. So this did not. It was a dramatization. I mean, it isn't. It's a dramatization because it's based on the story, but they're supposedly different people.
Yeah. On that note, let's move on to actress in a supporting role. So we have Emily Blunt for Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks for The Color Purple, America Ferrera for Barbie, Jodie Foster for Naiad, and Divine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers. So what do you think, Juan?
I wrote my notes. I think Divine Joy Randolph should get it. I mean, she'd be my vote. But again, it wouldn't surprise me if Emily Blunt got it. You know, she did a good job in Oppenheimer as being the patient and also quirky person in her own right. Although everybody was fantastic in this. I mean, Jodie Foster was great in Naiad, but I think those are the two choices. It's either going to be, I'd like it to be, I mean, The Holdover, she really had a great role. I mean, she had to go through peaks and valleys, you know, to.
Yeah, I will say just in general in the acting categories that like it's like Murderer's Row. Like all the performances are good. So Lori.
Yeah, I think I agree with Juan. I think Divine Joy Randolph's performance was really nuanced. I haven't seen Naiad and I haven't seen The Color Purple. But in the three that I have seen, I think Emily Blunt, America Ferrera, and Divine Joy Randolph all did a great job. But I think that Randolph's was probably my favorite because just like what Juan said, with the ups and downs, and you see different facets of her and you see her hopes and her disappointments. And I think she just did a great job throughout the movie.
Yeah. How about you, Peter?
Same. Yeah. I think Divine Joy Randolph just shows such a range of believability. Like none of it feels like she's jumping to a different character. In every moment, I think she's really good in this, and I think she's going to take it, and I think she should.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're unanimous on that one. The only odd nomination here is I think Danielle Brooks was good in The Color Purple, but I thought Fantasia was better and it showed more range and kind of an arc where Danielle Brooks' character was pretty same through most of that movie. But she was really good. It's just it didn't require as much, I think, but it was an interesting movie. Okay, actor in a supporting role. Here, this is where we have Hollywood staying on brand and nominating Ken, but not Barbie. I'm not saying that he wasn't good. You could say he was sublime. But so the nominees, we have Sterling K. Brown for American Fiction, Robert De Niro for Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer, Ryan Gosling for Barbie, and Mark Ruffalo for Poor Things. So what do you have, Juan?
This is a difficult one for me. I mean, I was trying to figure out, again, a lot of good roles, but I think the Academy might give it to De Niro as a lifetime role. But I think because of my love of Poor Things, I would have voted for Ruffalo since he was the best idiot scoundrel ever to come on screen. So those are my picks.
All right. How about you, Lori?
I would go with Sterling K. Brown. I just saw American Fiction a couple days ago, and he just crushed me in every scene. I was just like, I can watch this man, you know, pushing through his heartbreaking, and his heartbreaking for so many different reasons that he's just begun exploring his identity, but also he's lost his marriage and his kids, and then he's losing family members. He's also getting acceptance from some family and some from not from others. And I just thought that complexity came through in every single scene that he was in. And every time he was on screen, I was just like so sad for him. I could really feel what that character was feeling. So his was my favorite. I did think, haven't seen Killers of the Flower Moon, I'm sure De Niro is great in it. I did think that the other three that I have seen were fantastic. But I think Sterling K. Brown was far and away the best for me.
How about you, Peter?
Not a bad pick in the bunch for me. I was really happy to see Sterling K. Brown included in this. I wasn't sure if he was going to make it. There was a lot of supporting actors who didn't make it here, and I think even maybe deserve to. But yeah, everyone who was nominated did a fantastic job. My pick would probably be Sterling K. Brown. I think the Academy will probably give it to one of the Roberts. I'll guess Robert Downey Jr. I think one of them are going to get it, and yeah. I'd like Sterling, but yeah.
Yeah, I agree. The part in American Fiction when essentially, you know, he comes to the realization that like neither of his parents ever really knew who he really was. And you know, because his father has passed away and his mother has dementia. And so he's never going to really know if they would have accepted him. Although you kind of get the impression that dad wouldn't have, but he still sort of wishes that his father had known him. But I think it's going to go to Robert Downey Jr. I was a little surprised that Willem Dafoe for Poor Things didn't get a nomination here. I would have preferred that over Mark Ruffalo because I can't figure out if Mark Ruffalo's accent being as bad as it was part of the character or if it was a bad performance because his accent is terrible. It kind of came and went. Not Keanu Reeves level from Bram Stoker's Dracula, but it had a lot of holes in it where Emma Stone's was very good. So, but it was a very broadly comedic and very showy role. And I really enjoyed him in it, but yeah, the accent was the problem. And this is my problem. I pay attention to accents and it bothers me when they're not good. Okay. Actress in a leading role. So for Naiad, we have Annette Bening. For Killers of the Flower Moon, we have Lily Gladstone, Anatomy of a Fall, Sandra Hüller, Maestro, Carey Mulligan, Poor Things, Emma Stone. Another very good lineup. What do you have, Juan?
I'm going for Emma Stone for Poor Things. I mean, she had, obviously it was, you know, she was the focal point of the film, and I loved the film, and I love what she was going through, and I always loved her way of looking at the world and how crazy it was and how she kind of soldiered on. As looking at this, I had my notes. I initially thought Carey Mulligan might be the Academy's pick, but maybe Lily Gladstone. I mean, that was a good film. I mean, she did a great job as Molly Burkhart, and she had to do a lot of strenuous stuff when, you know, and there's a portion of the film she's infirm and, you know, and then gets recovered, which I think she carried off. So, but again, a very good category.
How about you, Lori?
So I haven't seen enough of these, unfortunately. However, I will say that I thought that Emma Stone was just incredible in Poor Things, primarily because of her physical acting, where she's, you know, I don't want to spoil it too much, but she's sort of, I mean, I don't know, maybe we can. Are we okay spoiling?
I think we're okay.
Yeah, this far in, if you're still with us and you don't want Poor Things to be spoiled for you. So she's got a toddler's brain at the beginning, but in a woman's body. And you see her developing motor skills throughout the movie. And I don't know if this movie was filmed chronologically along with the trajectory of the actual movie. They usually aren't. Mm-hmm. And so the idea that she was able to stay consistent with where she was in her motor skills, like even on the cruise ship, she's still tottering a little bit, even though she's very sexually active. She's still kind of tottering, like she hasn't quite got her balance yet. And the way that she was able to develop that consistently throughout the movie, I thought was just incredible. And I was, even while I was watching it, I was thinking, did she like keep a calendar? And she's like, okay, on these days I need to walk like 60% like a baby. And on this day I need to walk 15% like a baby to keep track of it. So I was just really impressed with that aspect of her performance.
Yeah. I think that's an underrated part of an actor's performance is the physicality of it. And it definitely kind of going back to what I was saying about Daniel Brooks and the Color Purple, right? Emma Stone has such a range that she has to perform. And that's very impressive to me. Go ahead, Peter.
I echo everything that's been said. I think this category is such a tight race for me between Emma Stone and Lily Gladstone. I think they both gave really exceptional performances, really different performances. I think Lily Gladstone's is far more reserved. It's a lot less acting, but I think it's equally as good. It's really, really great. I would be happy if either of them won. I think I'm going to give the edge to Lily Gladstone. We'll see. We'll see. I think it's a toss-up.
For your prediction or for your pick?
For my prediction. For my prediction. Okay. My pick, I'll give it to Lily Gladstone as well. I think they're both great.
Nice. Yeah. I'm going to guess it's going to be Emma Stone. I would pick Sandra Hüller. I thought she was fantastic in Anatomy of a Fall.
Yeah.
Just very, very believable. Really, really. And pulling off all the languages she had to do as well was impressive. And she's also in The Zone of Interest. So, big year for her. Okay, so then actor in a leading role. We have Bradley Cooper for Maestro, Colman Domingo for Rustin, Paul Giamatti in The Holdovers, Cillian Murphy in Oppenheimer, and Jeffrey Wright in American Fiction. What do you think, Juan?
I just saw Rustin yesterday, and I decided to make him my pick, even though he's a long shot. I mean, he's, you know, there are a lot. What's interesting is Coleman Domingo and Jeffrey Wright are also in Rustin, which is kind of interesting. And also Coleman kind of impressed me because I saw The Color Purple where he plays Mister, who's the cad in the film.
Yeah, oh, he's nicely. Terrible. Yeah.
And he plays a completely different character. He's playing an activist, black gay rights leader, and all of those things come into play when he's coming to organize the March on Washington in 63. So, but obviously the one that everybody's wondering is probably Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer, since Oppenheimer's the one with the big stick in this one.
How about you, Lori?
It's Jeffrey Wright for me. I haven't seen Rustin or Maestro. I do want to see Rustin. But I just thought Jeffrey Wright was fantastic in American Fiction, especially in the early parts where he's at work. Again, having, you know, I'm going to mention again, recently quit my job of a long, long time. And so he starts out at work. He's frustrated at work. And for the first like 15 minutes of the movie, I felt like I could feel how his chest felt in those scenes, like that he had that tight feeling in his chest where he's like, I just want to scream and yell and throw my stapler through the window. I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to let my arteries take the hit here. And I just, it felt so real to me. I could just really identify with him in those early scenes. And then I thought in every scene, you just like know what's going on in his head. And I thought that he did a fantastic job, whether it was sad, whether it was intense and angry, whether it was funny. He was just right there giving a fantastic performance. And I loved it. So I would go with him.
Yeah.
But of course, we know who's going to get it. The guy who only ate one cube of cheese per day for 6 months to get thin enough to be Oppenheimer is going to get it. And to be fair, that's hard work. That's hard work.
It is. It is. Yeah. All right. What do you think, Peter?
I think Cillian Murphy's going to take it. I agree with the consensus there. I think he did a great job in the role, but I also wish Paul Giamatti would get it. And I'm kind of hoping for an outside win for him. I just think he, just like the Divine Joy Randolph and Don McSessa from The Holdovers, all three of them just deliver such great performances. And I don't think. Yeah, I know it's not quite as, you know, momentous. I think the Academy loves to give this award to people who've portrayed a real person. And Oppenheimer being what it is, Cillian Murphy's going to take it. But I'm secretly hoping Paul Giamatti swings in there.
Yeah, so I picked Paul Giamatti for my pick, and I'm taking my March Madness upset because that's as close as I come to caring about March Madness. Is it's March and it's madness to pick against Cillian Murphy, but I'm doing it anyway. I love Jeffrey Wright. Like, he's been so good in so many things for so long that, like, I'm glad to see him on the list. And I will say Coleman Domingo was amazing in Rustin, and he was very good in The Color Purple as well. And Bradley Cooper, especially in the younger scenes, I thought he was very, very effective in Maestro. He just seemed very natural. Once he got older and the congested nose thing started happening, I found it a little less compelling. But in the early scenes when it was in black and white, I found him very magnetic. But it's not my pick. My pick is Paul Giamatti. So we'll see what happens. Okay, we're on to directing. So we have Anatomy of a Fall. That's Justine Triet. Killers of the Flower Moon, Martin Scorsese. Oppenheimer, Christopher Nolan. Poor Things, Yorgos Lanthimos. And The Zone of Interest, Jonathan Glazer. What do you think, Juan?
Obviously, I'm going to go for Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things. I mean, that was a very creative, different-looking film. I mean, all the other ones are you know, pretty good. I mean, I think, obviously, Oppenheimer might be the Academy's pick. I mean, you know, Nolan did that. So I think it's going to – I'd like to think it's either or for one of those.
All right. What do you think, Lori?
I think for me, well, I think the Academy is going to pick Oppenheimer. But for me, I think Anatomy of a Fall again. I think the way that everyone is set up, the way everyone is moving through the scenes, in particular, again, the courtroom scenes, moving around the courtroom is so interesting. The way they move through the house and the camera follows them through the house as they're investigating, all just really, really good. Feels very real, feels very accurate. And so many moving pieces to those. And again, going back to what you said, Seth, about all of the different languages that are in play in the movie, that just seems like a whole lot of moving pieces to juggle. And I think it was done really well.
Yeah. Just the camera movement when the kid is testifying was really interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually, on my snubs for supporting actor. I thought he was amazing.
He really was. He really was.
All right, Peter, what do you think?
I've been saying how much I love the way Poor Things looks and feels throughout. I would love to see Yorgos Lanthimos get this. I think it's just such a uniquely shot film. It's such an interesting looking film that I would love to see it take it. Of course, I think Oppenheimer is going to take it. I think, I correct me if I'm wrong, but has Christopher Nolan ever won an Oscar for directing? If not, I think they'll probably use this opportunity to, you know, pass him an Oscar. And
I'm going to pick, my guess is Oppenheimer, but I would have gone with Anatomy of a Fall. And yeah, no Greta Gerwig here is kind of ridiculous. Yeah, I don't think Oppenheimer is Christopher Nolan's best film. I like The Prestige better, but that's just me. So, all right, on to Best Picture. So we can now, if anybody wants to talk about any of these films at greater length, we can do that. We've touched on a lot of them. So American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. I was a little surprised that Greta Lee didn't get an acting nod for Past Lives, personally. But yeah, what do you got, Juan, for Best Picture?
Well, again, I'm going to say Poor Things, my vote, and Oppenheimer, it's got a shoe in. The only film I don't think I've talked about is Past Lives. I did see it, and it's kind of an interesting thing. I mean, it's about paths not taken or paths taken, and it's but at the same time, I was kind of engaged with it, but at the same time, I didn't feel like there was any tension, and I felt the same way a few years ago when I saw in 2016 Brooklyn, because I didn't see any tension in that film. I felt the ending was, and I thought it was a long shot that the ending was going to be anything else than what it was. So, as I said, I saw all of these films, and then I crashed four other films just to get into all the major categories in acting. So I think I liked all of them. I mean, the only negative, Killers of the Flower Moon, I think there were a few scenes that they could have cut out. I disagree with a friend of mine who thought it was a perfect film. So that's, and Zone of Interest, a friend of mine, my friend Kim, who again, I think she says this is a film you only see once. I have to agree. Maybe it's one of those films you only see once. I don't think you're ever going to go back to that well again.
Yeah. Lori, what do you think?
So my favorite is American Fiction, followed very closely by Barbie. But yeah, I just thought every performance in American Fiction was so good. I liked that it was funny. I feel like in Best Picture, we don't often get a lot of things that have humor in them. So I thought it was very funny, very witty, in spite of being dark. You know, I'm sure that's kind of, I guess, part of the Best Picture mix is that there's some darkness in there too. But yeah, I just thought it was wonderful. I left the theater and I was just like, man, that was so good. So I really, really liked that. And then, of course, I loved Barbie. I'm a 40-year-old white woman. Of course, I loved Barbie. I mean, that movie was basically made for me. So I loved Barbie. It was lots of fun. And I didn't initially want to see Barbie. I mean, I thought, oh, I might see it if somebody, you know, asked me to go see it with them. And then when I started hearing that it was like kind of a loving send-up of Barbie and that it was very feminist, and I got interested in going to see it. And then it just really exceeded my expectations. It was so good. It was so funny. It was so sweet. So witty and insightful. So I loved Barbie. Anatomy of a Fall, I've talked about at length. I think it's a very good movie, but it's not up there in terms of being, I think, a good movie. And then also like as entertaining as American Fiction was for me, because I felt that American Fiction was a really good movie. And also I was just very entertained. I was never bored. And sometimes I did get bored during Anatomy of a Fall. Holdovers, I thought was really good. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I thought it was funny. But for me, it's something of, it's a very solid entry in the existing subgenre of disaffected, grumpy older man opens his heart through a friendship with a child in need. And, you know, we kind of know that story. And so I think this is a very good entry in that subgenre, but it wasn't really doing anything too new for me. But I agree with everybody's assessment that the performances in it were wonderful. So I absolutely enjoyed it. I was very entertained by The Holdovers. Oppenheimer was entertaining. Everybody was good in it. The bomb was very big. It's a good movie. It's a good movie. What's his name? Harry Styles would say it's like a movie, you know? It's like a movie. The reason you go to the cinema, it's a movie. Past Lives I really enjoyed. I disagree with Juan's assessment where you said there wasn't any tension. I felt there was so much tension, and the last few minutes of Past Lives, I was like, what's going to happen? And I was like, whatever happens is okay, and also someone's getting their heart broken.
Yeah.
And so it felt so complicated to me because there was no one to root against. I wanted all three of these people to get what they wanted and live happily ever after. They're all three nice people. And up till the very last second, I genuinely had no idea what was going to happen. And I think that that's really masterful when you're in the last 10 seconds of the movie. And I still was like, is she going to turn around and run? Is the Uber going to pull up and she's going to jump in it? Like, I just didn't know what was going to happen. So I felt a lot of tension at the end of the movie. I was very nervous and very sad for everybody. I think like all three of their hearts were of varying degrees of broken at the end of that movie. And then I saved Poor Things for last because I have the most complicated thoughts about it. What I like about Poor Things is that it is asking the question, how would a woman conduct herself and her life if she were completely free from taboo, immune to ideology? How would she choose to live? And I like that it's very upfront about it. And one of my favorite moments in the movie is when Mark Ruffalo tells her he's going to throw her overboard if she doesn't marry him. And she just basically says back to him, so your proposal is marriage or murder? And then he's like, well, no, of course not. Of course I'm not really going to throw you over the boat. And I liked that it just made it that stark, that some of the things that we say to each other and ways that we treat each other are that silly. When you put it in those terms, it really is that silly. So I really liked that about it. But I think more than I liked that, I disliked that it doesn't seem to at all grapple with the fact that she's a child, even though she's in a woman's hot, horny body. it seems like for a moment, what is his name? McCandless? Is that his name? The nice guy.
Yeah.
For a moment, he's like, she seems a little young. I don't know. Is this okay? But that's really the only moment in that movie where anyone even begins to ask that question. And I was uncomfortable with that, and I assume that's on purpose. I think I was supposed to be uncomfortable with that, but I don't think that the movie grapples with that in a useful or effective way. So more than I enjoyed it, and I did enjoy it. I was entertained. Visually, obviously, it's stunning. I think we all agree on that, and we all like the costumes and the set and everything. But more than anything else, that just really bothered me, and it was not something I was able to get past.
Yeah, I feel like the movie wants to use her youthful kind of naivete and innocence to look at different things, like when she looks down and she sees the poverty, right? But then it doesn't grapple with the other side of that.
And they never come back to that.
Yeah.
I was surprised that that seemed like such a pivotal moment for her, but she doesn't really come back to it. She does, you know, she does join the working people, but she doesn't really come back to that. And I kind of thought that she would at some point.
Yeah.
So my pick, American Fiction. I think the Academy's pick, Oppenheimer.
How about you, Peter?
So many good movies this year. I like pretty much everything in the Best Picture category. I think Anatomy of a Fall, fantastic. I'll just hit some of these that I haven't really talked about much. Killers of Flower Moon, I really liked this year. I think it's too long. But it inspired me to go read the book, and the book is excellent. And I feel like gives a lot more of the history that I thought was missing from the movie, the stuff I really wanted to hear about. Book's fantastic. Maestro is okay. Oppenheimer's good, and obviously it's going to win a lot of awards, and I think it deserves some of them. I think it maybe is a bit overblown, but it's good. Past Lives was included some of the biggest snubs for me. I was actually really disappointed to see Celine Song not be nominated for director. I think she did a fantastic job. I really love the tension of that movie. I agree with you, Lori. I think the tension in those final moments is so intense, and it left me feeling immensely emotional. I think it's one of those where you feel bad for everyone involved, but also happy and sad. It's so many complicated emotions, and I think to me it captures just a portrait of three different types of love, and all very authentic and all, yeah, really powerful. So I was disappointed to see that it didn't get many noms. Poor Things is probably my favorite of this year. I think for me, it had asked a lot of questions, and thinking on it more, maybe it didn't quite answer so many of them or explore enough of them, but it left me thinking the most of any of these movies about just everything it's kind of bringing up. So I think for those reasons, I would love to see Poor Things win. I think Oppenheimer will win.
Yeah. I'm going to guess that it's going to be Oppenheimer as well. My vote would go to Anatomy of a Fall. I did not find it too long. I was engaged with it the entire time. I thought it was just a tremendous movie. American Fiction was very funny in spots and just tore your heart out in others. And I liked the fact that they went for kind of the meta ending to it, where you're not sure, well, what really happened? And the movie is not at all interested in telling you. And I like that it stuck with that, right? What's the moral of the story? Well, there is no moral of the story. That's the point. It hangs a lantern on that. I'm so glad that Barbie is on this list, just because if you had asked me when I first found out that there was going to be a Barbie movie, I would have never in a million years thought it ends up on the Best Picture nominees. But it was really, really good. And some of it, like the success of it, I feel like is down to like Gen Z people making Barbenheimer a thing, but it wouldn't have worked if it wasn't such a good movie. The Holdovers, I really, really enjoyed. And yeah, I kind of agree with Lori that it's a certain type of movie, but it has some very touching moments in it that have really stayed with me. So I really enjoyed that. Killers of the Flower Moon, I'm on record as not being, I'm not going to say I'm not a fan of Scorsese's work. I just don't connect with it in any way. I've never rewatched one of his movies, never felt compelled to. So when he makes a 4-hour movie, it's 2 hours more than I want to watch of a Scorsese movie, no matter how well it's done. I did like the choice that was made at the end though, with the radio play. That was really interesting. Maestro, there were some good directing moments in it. There's one in particular that I'm thinking of where there's a shadow of Bernstein. His wife is literally in his shadow. And that was a really, really cool choice, but I didn't think it was that strong of a movie, other than when it shows him the long scene of him directing was very, very good. Really enjoyed that. Past Lives. Yeah. I'll echo a lot of things that Peter and Lori said about that last scene in particular with the way it was directed. It made me feel all the things. And then Poor Things. Yeah, it's complicated. I enjoyed it. The Zone of Interest, probably the most interesting movie that I watched this year in terms of how to tell a story and what is the story that's really being told. So I'm not going to say it was fun because it was not, but it was good. But I'm going to guess it's going to be Oppenheimer. I would choose Anatomy of Fall, but it's a strong crop of movies. So I don't think I'll be disappointed unless Maestro or Killers of the Flower Moon wins. So that is all the categories. And I apologize. My voice has gotten worse and my nose keeps running into my mustache. so hopefully not too many sniffles make it into the edit. But I'm coming down with something and we're recording this late enough before the Oscars that I was thinking, well, maybe we shouldn't do it, but we wouldn't have done it if I did that. So final thoughts on the Oscars this year, Juan?
Interesting crop. I just, wish I had more time to have checked out some of the other international films. And
yeah,
I wish Robot Dreams would have gotten released a few days earlier before this broadcast, because I think that might have changed my... I think it's going to be a fun film. It looks like a fun film.
Yeah. Lori, any final thoughts from you?
Yeah, just that of everything that I saw, I would say there were no duds. Everything that I saw, I thought was good. You know, I liked some things more than others, but I think that everything that I saw was worth my time. And so, yeah, this is the first year that I've set out to try to watch as much as possible. And obviously you all have seen a lot more than I did. But yeah, I was pleasantly surprised that I thought everything was really pretty good.
Wait, yeah. Lori, could I ask you a question?
Sure.
What was your metric for not wanting to see something? Because I know there were some things you mentioned in an email.
Oh, yeah. I didn't want to see anything that I thought was going to be like too much of a bummer.
All right.
And Maestro just really didn't interest me. I saw a couple of previews, and the ones that I saw were Seth, you mentioned the sort of nasally voice that Bradley Cooper was doing.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that you mentioned that, because I felt like kind of like, am I being a jerk because I don't want to listen to this through a whole movie? It just didn't super interest me. And I have a little bit of a grumpy reaction to the fake nose. I heard them like talking about it on NPR, I think, and I looked up pictures of Leonard Bernstein and I was like, did we need a fake nose? I mean, I don't know. Stuff like that sometimes just gets on my nerves probably a little more than it should. So I just was not super interested in seeing that one.
I'm glad you explained it. I thought the main reason was because he was such a cad. Well, he had cad moments of his wife, you know.
Oh, I don't know the first thing about him. I don't know anything about him.
Unfortunately, it was a marriage of convenience. Let's put it that way.
Oh, well. What are you going to do?
Peter, any final thoughts from you?
Yeah, I echo everyone else's. This has been a great year for the Oscars. Probably one of the first years in a while where there's nothing, at least Best Picture, nothing nominated there that I don't think deserves to be there. There's definitely been a few years we've been doing this, and there's been a few years where there's a movie on the list that you just leave to your head scratch, like leaves you scratching your head wondering, how did this make it when so many more deserving movies didn't? This year, there's some great stuff. And a lot of them I probably wouldn't have seen had they not been nominated, but I'm glad I did. Like American Fiction and Anatomy of a Fall. I probably wouldn't have caught them in the theater, wouldn't have got a chance to see them. And I'm glad I did. They were great.
All right. Well, Juan and Lori and Peter, thank you so much for doing this. If anybody has, social media or anything they want to plug, go ahead and do it. Juan, why don't you start?
I'm RainbowWar71 on Twitter, Blue Sky, and Mastodon. And try to be, as I said on an earlier podcast I did 2 weeks ago, I try to be interesting on those things. So you can catch me there.
Yeah. How about you, Lori?
I'm the co-host of the Hugo Girl podcast, and we are on Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, and Mastodon, pretty much at Hugo Girl podcast on all platforms. And we have a Twitter account, but we're kind of moving away from using it because it's pretty much only been porn bots for the past several months. So it seems like there's more conversation happening on other apps these days.
Yeah. Peter, you got anything you want to plug?
Nothing of note.
All right. Yeah. You can find Peter on certain episodes of Not So Brief and not Hugo Girl, not Hugo's There Yet, but we'll get there one time. Yes, Peter and I talk about books all the time, so
for sure.
All right, you can find me at Hugo's podcast most places, although on Blue Sky for some reason I decided to just go with Seth Heasley and Mastodon as well. So I'll try and put the social media links for people to check out. So. And I on social media, I will let people know who won the prediction game. So we'll see how that goes. All right. Thank you all for doing this. Bye.
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 Bye.